Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the show. We're watching some of the best of for this Thanksgiving broadcast, but I wanted to give you a little tour of the office here. It's a little bit messy, but also tell you about some of the products that I take on a daily basis. Of course, we have our little mascot, the gay frog here, one of my daughter's favorite toys at home. She loves running around with it. And of course, we have some beautiful new merch just for the holiday season. It may be Thanksgiving, but Christmas is coming up fast, so make sure you've got your ugly sweaters. Although I wouldn't even call it an ugly sweater. It's extremely high quality hoodie, actually, is what it is, with Santa there and the Santa's Choice America First. And we also have the America First shirt with the Christmas lights. Remember, just like Jeffrey Epstein, Christmas lights don't hang themselves. America First, very subtle with a little Christmas light decoration on there. We're lucky. We're lucky at InfoWars. We get the first shipment of all of the cool apparel. Now, right now, all the apparel on the alexjonesstore.com is 25% off for the Black Friday week-long sale. We have the similar design America First hat, cool trucker hat with that same Christmas light design. Everything from InfoWars is extremely high quality, just like our news, just like our information. Our products are, of course, top of the line, thealexjonesstore.com. So we get all of the new stuff early. We're very lucky. Another Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas, you filthy Democrat shirt. Something a little bit more subtle for you, but another fine piece of apparel. So we just get boxes of this stuff. It's amazing. In honor of our veterans, all the new hat designs. We get another, the Santa design there on that hat. You thought I dropped it, but there was another one. It's very cool. We get all the new designs. Another, here's the actual ugly Christmas sweater, and it is a sweater, not a hoodie, with all your favorite ghouls. All your favorite ghouls on here: AOC, Hillary Clinton, and Nancy Pelosi. Folks, for the info warrior in your life, you know where you got to go to shop. You got to go to thealexjonesstore.com. Again, the Black Friday sale is on, and you're getting 25% off all apparel and so much more. It's a cool little action figure. These are not available, unfortunately. You got to make these yourself, but it'll be in my son's Christmas stocking this year. Now, every morning before I do the show, I guess every mid-afternoon when I'm getting ready for the show, this is my routine. I take the methyl drive. I take the power plant, these together, we call the power drive combo. These do some incredible stuff. Rex Jones got me on them, and I take them every day. Both of them designed to work synergistically together, and I do those. And then I do, of course, the Shilajit gummies. In case you don't know what Shilajit is, I describe it all the time, but like, we should really make a big deal out of it. It literally emerges from the earth at the top of mountains. It's a miraculous superfood that I encourage everybody to take. They taste really good. Daily boost in vitality. You know, eventually you just start taking them and it just becomes a habit. And then when you don't take them, you seriously feel it. Irish sea moss as well. So I take two of these, a Shilajit gummy, the power plant, the methyl drive. Of course, we have the ultra methylene red here. Hopefully that's back in stock by the time this airs. And then nitric boost, if I need an extra boost, if I'm feeling not quite as energetic as normal. So I keep all these on a little shelf right by my computer where I do all of my news gathering for the day. And again, apologies for the mess, but you know, you don't want to work in an office that's too clean. You don't want to work in an office that's too well put together. This is a working office. This is a busy office. Things are constantly changing. People are coming in and out. People are switching up where they're sitting, who's doing what, where. It's a dynamic and vital operation we have here. And of course, it's all thanks to you when you go to thealexjonesstore.com. Thealexjonesstore.com, the Black Friday sale is on right now and will continue through Friday, November 28th. So any supplement you add to your cart, you get another one free. 2-for-1 on all supplements, 25% off all apparel. And I hope everybody's having a wonderful Thanksgiving. And I hope to see you at wherever our new digs are, whatever happens to us next. You make it possible for us to continue this operation no matter what happens. So thank you so much for being here with us. Now I'm gonna enjoy the dispatch from the boss that we have playing in every room. It's fantastic. Back to the show. Thanks, everybody.
We are live, still on air, despite all the admissions of the CIA, the FBI, the DOJ, hundreds of millions of dollars spent trying to shut us down. But despite that, because you, the activist audience in the arena, stood with us with your word of mouth, your prayer, and your financial support, we have not only persevered, we have not only overcome, but we have dominated.
While other networks lie to you about what's happening now, InfoWars tells you the truth about what's happening next. Visit InfoWars.com today.
The spirit of victory lives in InfoWars. And InfoWars is more than a URL. It is more than this building. It is the people of America and the world becoming awake and standing up and rising and demanding liberty and freedom in the animating contest in the war against the tyrants.
Listening to The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at X.com.
Yes, folks, we are streaming on X at InfoWars, at Real Alex Jones, at War Room Show, and of course, InfoWars.com/show. My guest is Ian Carroll. You can find him on X at Ian Carroll Show, cancelIanCarroll.com, and on YouTube as well at Ian Carroll Show there also. And it seems like the talk of the day today is this young Republican group chat. And I think this is very symbolic of the old guard kind of trying to stick to the old way of doing things, the old conservative attitude, and resisting moving on to the next generation that's a little bit edgier, that doesn't care quite as much what their enemies think about them. Have you been following this at all?
Yeah, I have. Not in any great depth because it doesn't feel like a very deep story to me. It feels like more partisan hit piece politics that's just kind of meant to distract and flame tensions. And it is just feels like a giant nothing burger to me. It's like these people have clearly never talked to 20-something-year-olds and never been in a group chat with a bunch of dudes. But you know, whatever, people got to be outraged about something. I think that the responses and the back and forth of, you know, everyone in the media is actually a lot more interesting than the group chats themselves.
Right. Well, and again, I think it's like a dividing line. It's sort of become a litmus test where, like, if you are apologizing for this, if you're groveling at the feet of your enemies, you're lost, man. Like you need to be left on the side of the road as we charge forward. And it's not about we're now Nazis. It's just like, this is all fabricated. It's all nonsense. They don't really care. So why are you feeding into it? And it's just yep, infuriating. And it seems like, sorry, but it seems like the boomers are just clinging on to power. And I've been talking to some people 100%. Sort of behind the scenes, and that really is happening, where the old school GOP sort of moneyed boomers are trying to force out the young people that didn't even have anything to do with this, but they basically are embarrassed by the whole thing and just want everybody out so they can bring in sort of rhino people that support Black Lives Matter but are still technically Republican. And the young people are resisting it, and there's this sort of behind-the-scenes battle going on that I wonder if it's ever going to break out, you know, into the open in a bigger way. But then it also brings up the question of, like, the right and the left is kind of getting blurred at this point. What is your take on that? Because I see so many people saying, you know, this is an opportunity. The left and the right are really aligned on a lot of stuff. But then I look over to the left and they're telling me to castrate my child and, you know, all this other good. They hate white men. It's like, well, how are we supposed to bridge that gap? Do you think there's any hope for unification between the left and the right now?
Not with the extremes, no. But with, you know, the sane and rational middles of both sides, absolutely. I think that we're more unified in the 80% middle than we've ever been in our lives. And I think that stories like Jeffrey Epstein and the war in Gaza and the technocrats taking everything over, I think those all align in the same way. And I think you're totally right about the boomer generation, the old guard, the old boys club, trying to hold on to power. And we're seeing that story reiterated over and over and over again. And I would argue that the turning point story, the Charlie Kirk story, is a very similar story, actually, right, where Charlie is this younger kid. He's not a kid, but he's definitely younger than all of them. And he's interfacing with even younger kids, almost as a canary in the coal mine. And the canary starts coming up being like, hey, this is not this isn't working with the kids anymore. I can't keep doing this. It's not going to work. And when we started to see how the donors were pushing back on that, there's this sort of denial of reality, as though like this older generation thinks that they can just stick their hands in their ears and their head in the sand and pretend that it's not happening. But ultimately, the whole world is changing all around them. And it's only a matter of maybe 5 to 10 years before the change is just natural law. But we're seeing a bunch of sort of versions of it rearing its head right now. Whether it's these group chats and like, you know, the conversation around the language in them, or it's Charlie talking about the donors and talking about what college kids are talking about and asking, over and over and over. I mean, even just the dynamic between like the Nick Fuentes right and like the Tucker Carlson right, it sort of is, subtly visible in all aspects of politics right now.
And it all, for some reason, always ties back to Israel. And it's like, it's almost frustrating because it's like, I don't want this to always be about Israel, but you know, I'm talking to a couple people behind the scenes about sort of what was going on with young Republicans. And I'm like, where did this beef start? Like, what is this all about actually? And they're like, well, Gavin Wax is a Zionist and he was trying to be sort of displaced by non-Zionist people. And it's like, really? This also. So this as well. So the Charlie Kirk thing is about Israel. Jeffrey Epstein's about Israel. Gaza, obviously, and Trump and Iran. And that goes back to Israel. It's just like, this just seems like a thorn in our side, or it just seems like at the root of all of this, it always goes back to Zionism for some reason. I don't want to be talking about this. Why does it always go back to that?
Well, I mean, if you analyze the situation, honestly, either Israel is trying to influence American politics to, you know, boost support for Israel, or they're not. And if you want to argue that Israel is not trying to boost support for Israel in America, I don't know what planet you live on.
Right.
I think the more content, like the question that people kind of argue over is whether that's a good thing or it's a bad thing. But like, it's undeniable that they are extremely invested in affecting America's opinion of Israel. And so basically that's a propaganda campaign targeting Americans. And if you are running a propaganda campaign targeting Americans and your entire nation's survival basically depends on the continued support of conservative Americans, that is the kind of situation where you have to maintain power. It's like you're wrestling with someone and they have a weapon and you're trying to control that right. weapon to keep them from harming you. And you have to do everything you can to keep that weapon from getting free. And that's kind of the behavior that we're seeing. And that's why it pops up everywhere, because any potential opening is a leak in the dam that could crack the whole thing. Like, you can't have the Turning Point stage, you know, platforming anti-Israel opinions, because what'll happen when all the kids start hearing that and everyone starts talking about it? You can't have these young Republicans taking over, because then this whole organization is going to flip on Israel. You know, that mindset, whether true or not, it's really obvious to see how Zionists might see that as an existential threat and as a sort of like crack in the dam kind of a moment of keep it all down. And so I think by the nature of the situation, you sort of imply that it will show up everywhere, because everything on the right wing has sort of been built, not literally, but just about everything on the right wing has been built up on Zionist money to promote Zionist, the Zionist version of the right wing, kind of like the Judeo-Christian version of Christianity. And so it just inherently is baked into the entire cake. And I think that there's no, like, we haven't had such an overt confrontation with that truth until the war in Gaza, and specifically Trump's presidency, that is just more of the same. So it's just really in our faces.
Yeah, it's really hard to ignore. And that, you know, to me was the really interesting thing about some of the text messages Candace Owens was coming out with. No matter who you believe killed Charlie Kirk, you got to see behind the scenes at what a pressure campaign looked like, what influences these high-powered sort of right-wingers have to deal with and have to try to balance and have to worry about, all right, I'm losing credibility here, but I'll lose money if I don't go with that. And it's obvious that people are being restricted and guided in ways they don't want to go. And it's unfortunate. Where did you land on, I mean, are you still investigating the Charlie Kirk assassination? It seems like there's new stuff coming out continuously. Some of it, I don't know how serious it is or whether to take it that seriously. I know I talked to you a little bit about the Google search results that have come up, which yep. I was sort of looking at, and I was kind of going, well, this could be something. It could not be. I'll look into this later. And then I see that apparently Google went into their back end and like deleted all of the results. So you can't even find them anymore. So now I'm like, okay, this must have been something, because they wouldn't go in and delete this if it didn't happen. So can you explain what that is about and what these Google searches are?
Yeah, so I forget the guy's name, the original account. I wish I remembered it. Maybe your guys have a clip to pull up.
But
he finds this Google search term about the Losee Center or Tyler Robinson, you know, one of these very specific phrases that is about this shooting. And he's looking at Google search terms of, you know, when were people searching this? And he happens to notice that Washington, D.C., if you, because in Google search, you know, analysis, you can shrink your query and look at really specific search data. And he shrinks it down to just look at District of Columbia. And he notices that, like, Tyler Robinson was Google searched specifically in District of Columbia enough times to make a significant blip on the map, like a month before Charlie Kirk was assassinated. Or I guess Tyler Robinson's might have been a few days before the assassination, because he started Googling all these, looking up all these different terms, Losee Center, Tyler Robinson, the name of the hospital, the name of the construction company that redid the whole scene, all these little terms that are very specific to this crime that no one would have known about or been thinking about, especially in Washington, D.C., ahead of the crime. And he finds all of these data points where there's this huge spike in search data before the assassination happened. Right. So there he is, Real Baron podcast. And he publishes this, and he does at least one. I don't know if he did more than one, but he did at least one of these searches live just to show us. He looked up, I think, the Mauser rifle. I think he looked up Mauser 30-06 or something like that. And he showed live on his video on stream that there's the blip and it is before the killing. And he was just testing a new term. He didn't even know if it would be there, but it was. But, then all the search data seems to get deleted. So we can't double check that it was all real, which is unfortunate. It doesn't disprove it, but it makes it hard to double check. But since the initial reporting, he and other people have been looking up other search terms and finding other spikes of a search term. Like, for example, the construction company that paved over the whole crime scene, that got searched in DC, I think. It might have been in Israel. There's like these spikes in Israel and in DC, which is super sketchy.
And nowhere
and
else.
So that one got discovered later, and then that one also got wiped like that day. So it seems like there's something going on where they're watching that reporting and they're clearing out the search data for everything that was searched around that. I don't know how to come up with an innocuous explanation for it. Data doesn't lie.
Yeah.
Right? It can be confusing and misleading, but that's pretty specific data.
Yeah. So it was these search terms that nobody would have searched, really, certainly not with the, you know, all in the same place at the same time, and it's only DC and only Israel where it pops up. So it's not like they were searching DC to see if anybody and elsewhere they were also searching. No, it was like nobody in the country searched this term, the name of the surgeon or the name of the hospital, except little spikes like 2 months before the assassination in DC and Israel. And it's very suspicious. This is from Project Constitution on X, and they you know, did a breakdown of this, but he said, I fired up Google Trends for Precision Marble and Granite LLC, which is that the company that paved over the crime scene. Boom, massive U.S. spike right around June 20th, syncing perfectly with the Israel/DC recon blitz. Snapped a mobile screenshot, ironclad evidence of foreknowledge, switched to desktop for a clean side-by-side like all my other dumps. Poof, zero results, zilch. Tried phone again, gone. Had a third-party buddy verify on their device, same thing, black hole, no data. He says this isn't a glitch, it's live deletion. Google, or CIA Mossad string pullers, wiping Trends data the second we go viral. So he's saying that he searches this, gets a result, and then the instant he gets the result, he can't do it again. He goes to another computer and it doesn't show up. So this is very, very suspicious. Again, maybe it wasn't suspicious before, but who has the power to delete these results in lifetime? And I haven't seen anybody come up with a good technical answer of how this could just happen, as you say, innocuously or, you know, without some sort of nefarious activity behind it.
I mean, his wording in the post actually sort of misrepresents what he says happened in a way that is sort of significant too. He describes what you just read, that he finds the search term, takes a screenshot, and then goes to do another, you know, screen recording of it, and then it's gone. In the wording here, he says that they delete these things after we go viral. But what he's just described is not that. He's described them deleting it while he is the only one that's aware that he's found it, while he has just searched it and it has just been found, is what he seems to describe. Now, I suspect that this whole tweet was written by AI just from the language of it being written, which doesn't mean that it's all lies. It just means that I think he was using it for verbiage. So it's possible there's some miscommunication in terms of the actual wording of the post. But he seems to be describing like live surveillance of these search terms and then active deletion the moment one is searched, which is weird. That doesn't really make like you know, if you were live surveilling all the search terms that you know are suspicious, you'd think you would just delete them all instead of surveilling them.
Right.
So I'm a little confused by his posts on that one in specific, but there's, you know, there seems to be a lot of smoke coming out somewhere here. And so it feels like there's probably some fire. And again, this is where, like, you asked where I'm at with the investigation. And you're right that so much has happened, and it's like there's still stuff coming out, and it's kind of hard to tell, like, what was debunked and what are we still looking at and what's the chances and what does everyone think now. And it is always important to rewind and remember, like, what do we still know from the start and what is still just true that is unanswered and in the air. And the most obvious one is what you put out, and then we're super vindicated on, is that you put out this really controversial tweet where someone close to Charlie had said to you a month before that Charlie had been saying that he was afraid that Israel would try to kill him if he turned on them. And that seemed like this crazy out there tweet to a lot of people when you posted it, and then especially the day of the shooting, and it became this whole big conspiracy theory, and people were calling you a liar and all this stuff. And then you were corroborated not by one other person, but by two other sources, very high-quality journalists, Max Blumenthal and Candace Owens. And some of that reporting, basically, like, Candace is saying that she has three different sources talking about Charlie saying those sorts of things. Max is saying that he has three to five sources, and so it's... one of, like, it's extremely corroborated at this point. And that's, like, one of these statements that is easy to lose it in the river of information that's coming down and forget that that sort of is a core piece of what's happening here. But that is still this Republicans group chats, because I'm still wondering about the Charlie Kirk group chat where he said, I need to abandon the pro-Israel cause. We haven't heard Turning Point USA make any statements about that. We haven't heard them address that at all. We haven't heard them say if they're going to do that or why they're choosing to not follow through on what was apparently one of Charlie's last convictions. I don't know what to do with that, but it's real. And it's pretty well corroborated at this point.
Well, you know, TPUSA did respond, or at least Andrew Colvitt did respond to confirm that text chain was legit. and interestingly, tell me if I have this wrong, it sounded to me like he said, I know it's true because I took that screenshot. Andrew Colvitt said, I sent that screenshot into the FBI when they were asking us about who may have had motive for killing Charlie. So it sounds like he was sort of admitting, yeah, we also suspected Israel, and so we sent in this stuff to the FBI.
There's a bit of subtlety in what you just said, though, is that Colvitt said I had also, like, passed around that screenshot, which doesn't really make clear if that means that he's the one that actually, like, had the phone, screenshotted the thing, and then sent it to everyone, including Candace. I don't think that's what he's implying. I think that what his words meant is that I was in that chat, and I have screenshotted that exact piece because it's so spicy, and I had sent it to the FBI and these other things for what I thought was the right thing to do, and implying that someone else sent it to Candace because other people must have also screenshotted it, I think is what's implied there, which is, you know, same, but subtle. But you're absolutely right that he did claim that he sent it to law enforcement right away, which implies that he had questions as well. And I don't know. I've been wondering from the very start. I was looking very closely at Erica Kirk and at TPUSA people to see if they were going to condemn the whole conversation around Israel. Are they going to come out and say, Candace is crazy, you're crazy, we're all crazy? And they didn't really do that. And furthermore, there's some donors, not the Jewish ones, but there's other donors, and there's other people on the inside that are reaching out and leaking things and getting involved in, like, making sure that that part of the story doesn't die, because I think naturally everyone is extremely suspicious. Right now, the investigation is sort of dead-ended into the FBI doing their own thing behind closed doors, and all the information that we have in the public square being hard to match up to Tyler Robinson and a .30-06 rifle from the Losi Center. But it's not impossible, not entirely impossible anyways. And so we're sort of in this waiting period where basically a bunch of ballistics experts on YouTube are carefully and systematically analyzing the crime scene, doing aerial surveys, analyzing all the video evidence that we have, and having a really interesting, complex discussion online about the quality of evidence, what the evidence shows, what different theories might or might not line up. So it's been really cool to kind of watch the experts work and follow along with them and report on what they're coming up with.
Yeah, and I mean, Candace Owens has been doing really, really an incredible job, you know, exposing all of this and coming out with all of this. And, you know, she said, the only people that can stop me, she mentioned somebody, but then she said Erica Kirk. She said, you know, if Erica Kirk tells me not to do this, then I won't do it.
It was her husband and Erica Kirk.
So there you go. So obviously they haven't told her to stop. So, you know, just sort of de facto approval of what she's looking into. And she's got the receipts.
Let's analyze that for just a second, actually, because this is the first time that I've kind of put these two thoughts together that we've been talking about here. Is we know that the text message from Charlie that he's saying he had to abandon the pro-Israel cause is real. Andrew Colvett confirmed that. So his wife knew it was real. Right. His wife saw those exact pressures and struggles more than anyone else. If there's anyone in the world that feels Charlie's the pressure and the pain that Charlie was under and might be a little resentful of the way that Charlie was being treated, it should be his wife. His wife should be the first person that is, you know, wanting to push back on people that are being mean to Charlie. And so I can only imagine that Erica Kirk should know exactly how Charlie felt and should probably share a lot of those sentiments. And so that implies that she is based.
Right.
Right. And if she's not, like, if there's any version of the story where Erica is not on that page, then it's like, well, shit, now we're talking Erica Kirk conspiracies, because you're married to the man. He's the love of your life. You have the most amazing love story ever. You're raising kids together. He tells you everything. By all accounts, you guys were the closest ever. And he was clearly going through this, and you clearly saw them pressuring him, and you're a loyal, you know, Christian wife. And so from all indications, Erica, the new CEO of Turning Point USA, gets it and knows what Charlie was going through and is very much on the side of investigate all the leads, I would assume, because she hasn't condemned it yet and she knows everything. And the only situation where I can imagine her going against that perspective of Charlie's would be where she was like some freaking secret agent or something, which is not something I suspect is true. Although those theories are floating around.
Yeah, I don't suspect that either. I think people overestimate the likelihood that people are living double lives and just completely dishonest about literally everything, and they have kids with somebody they don't really love. It's just like, stop that. You know, that to me is too far. But, you know, when she gave her first address where she says, you know, to the people who killed Charlie Kirk, like, your day is coming, and it was like really, you know.
Notice the language.
When I first saw that, I was like, oh, she knows. She knows and she's aware and she's talking straight to him.
Yeah, she spoke in the plural.
Yeah.
She specifically said these people, right? She did not single out Tyler Robinson. She didn't say his name. She didn't say the shooter. Like, she did say the young man when she said, I forgive you. But she was using this intentionally very vague language that, like, it was hard not to notice that all that language applies to any old shooter. It applies to any old situation. And she used the plural multiple times. I'm not super optimistic that we're going to actually get results from Turning Point or from the FBI, because ultimately now Erica is under all that pressure. Now Charlie's legacy is at threat of being taken away from Erica and whoever she's aligned with in there. Like, she's now in the thick of that exact battle. And I can only imagine, though she seems incredibly prepared to take it over, she's not as prepared as Charlie Kirk was. So there's definitely some stuff going on inside Turning Point, and I think we're all pretty curious what's the scoop, what's the tea, and what's going to fall out of there when it gets shook.
And, of course, the only people coming out with new information are you guys, are Candace Owens and you and you know, Ryan Matta and the people doing this research. I haven't heard anything from the FBI. I'm pretty sure to this date the last thing we heard from the FBI was the text messages that nobody even believes in the first place. Yeah. So, you know, if they're,
it's because we're also hateful. You just have to be more hateful. You just have to hate people, and that's how you, you know, get to the bottom of things.
Well, maybe I'll work on that. More with Ian Carroll on the other side. Follow Ian on X at Ian Carroll Show, cancelIanCarroll.com, YouTube at Ian Carroll Show. More on the other side. Don't go anywhere, folks. Short commercial break. We'll be right back.
My fellow InfoWarriors, we are having right now, in late November into early December, the biggest sale in the history of InfoWars. That's in 28 years. You know why? It's the InfoWars closing mega blowout sale. And some would say, well, the bad guys are about to take it over. Why should we support it? There's not even enough money in here to keep us running until they have the state auction, or they're saying mid-December to early January. And here's the catch. If they have a real auction and allow good guys to come in and bid, well, then we'll just continue on. I just won't be the owner. But you already saw the federal auction that even the judge said was a fraud and wasn't real to The Onion and Bloomberg and the Democrats. And so because they're the plaintiffs and they control what's happening through the state court judge that ran the original show trial on us, I'm not holding my breath. I mean, barring a miracle, they're going to, you know, auction it to themselves for $1 or whatever, and then this place shuts down. We've got the Alex Jones Network, our great sponsor, Bigly. But I'll tell you this. We'll shut down for sure if funds don't come in to InfoWarsStore.com. Remember last year when The Onion, this time last November, announced they owned us, sales went down over 75% and have stayed like that because people were like, well, we're not going to give them money. But, of course, the judge ruled they didn't buy it. And, of course, The Onion says now they intend to try to bid and get it again.
What would you control?
I mean, I really would like to control InfoWars.
No, that's a good answer.
But regardless, it doesn't matter. Our tank is on zero, basically. Okay, we're on E. This is just enough money coming in with the products we have to pay the payroll, to keep the lights on, and to operate to see if this final Hail Mary shot with the state auction works and if good guys are actually allowed to buy it. So remember, the plaintiffs have said they don't want money. They want us off the air. So I'm not going to give up. I'm going to go right to the line here. And this is the biggest sale. You ever heard us say 75% off? That's right. And the products we have are products with great manufacturers, supplement makers that love us and have been giving it to us on spec. So this is all fresh, ladies and gentlemen. We've been in bankruptcy. We've not been able to buy new product. But with this system, we have the product on hand, ready to ship to you, and you're guaranteed to get it. So take action right now. Emergency fundraiser. Last chance to save up to 75% at InfoWarsStore.com. Body's Ultimate Turmeric Formula, the very strongest, 40% off. Ultimate Fish Oil, the highest quality, incredible, 40% off. Prebiotic Fiber, 75% off. Pain MD, an incredible natural pain reliever. It works incredibly. This is a product that I came up with top designers. Final run of that available. Pain MD, 60% off. Nitric Boost, a fan favorite. Dr. Judy Mikovits loves it. Cleans out the heart. So do the cardiovascular. Spike protein detoxer, and men have a great effect, let's just say, in the man department with it. Nitric Boost, 40% off. Plus, great deals on books, DVDs, shirts, hoodies, and other items at InfoWarsStore.com. So this is probably the last run. These are collectible items. It's history. Help us fight right up to the end, never giving up, and trusting in God for a miracle if that's God's will. But God works through you, so take action, which is probably the last time you can, here in the next month at InfoWarsStore.com.
Is there's going to be a large set of plaintiffs who are going to be dividing up the corpse of InfoWars in the bankruptcy estate.
And money is just one component of that, and not the most important component of it.
Take Alex Jones' platform that he talks about away.
And if you're considering giving him money, I just want you to know that based on the jury's verdict today, it's not a very good bet.
The money's not even really the question for me. The question is, will this suit be successful at stopping him from being on the national stage?
Take him out.
What would you control?
I mean, I really would like to control InfoWars.
No, that's a good answer.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Teasing Ian Carroll. I don't approve of this. I don't approve of it at all. Ian Carroll is my guest. Ian Carroll Show on X, cancelIanCarroll.com, YouTube, Ian Carroll Show as well. And you brought up something during the break that I am glad you brought up, because I have not had time to look into this, but you're telling the crew that you spent all morning with your head in the Russian JFK dossier. So apparently Russia had a dossier on JFK that they released through Anna Paulina Luna, if I have that right. It has now been published. You've had a chance to look at it. What is this? Give us the background and tell us what's in it.
Yeah, well, first off, what is it when we have a foreign nation giving documents that are being released on Twitter through this, like, single congresswoman? It's a funny way to get these kinds of documents, and for a foreign nation to tell us about our own presidential assassination.
Right.
But
kind of a nothing burger. I think we all sort of expected nothing to come of it. There is a lot of interesting information in them, and I'll kind of break it down a little bit. But it's not like it solved the case or anything like that. It basically is just stuff that sort of absolves Russia of guilt. And, you know, obviously you should be a little suspicious of Russia providing information that absolves Russia of guilt. But it is pretty well documented. So it's like 380-some pages, basically all in Russian. There's a whole bunch of sources in there. There's a whole bunch of old photographs and exhibits in there. There's letters, handwritten notes, and stuff like that. And it's basically just a compilation of all of their related intelligence about Lee Harvey Oswald, JFK, JFK's relationship with Russia, every communication that happened in the immediate aftermath of JFK's death, and a couple of other sort of related tangential investigations and ideas. And so what I did, because I don't speak Russian and it's a lot of pages, is I basically wrote a big AI script that organized it all, translated it all, and then scraped through and sort of like categorized each section and broke it down so that I could look at each section one thing at a time, and specifically looking for any new information. Is there anything new that we didn't already know in the public domain that is contained in these documents? There's a fair bit of surveillance information about Lee Harvey Oswald. If anyone's not familiar, Lee Harvey Oswald, the patsy that they said killed JFK, he was selected as the patsy because he was sort of a mentally unstable sort of CIA officer, because he had worked with CIA in some way, but often with CIA people, they're sort of halfway in, halfway out, because they're kind of working undercover and sort of being double agents. And it's always a little unclear with these kinds of people who they really worked for. And that's perfect, because Lee Harvey Oswald was sort of close enough that they could surveil him, they could send him places, they could assign him places, but he was also far enough away that they could be like, look, he was a Soviet defector. And he had been apparently tasked with either infiltrating on behalf of the American government, the Cuban and Soviet like socialist kind of groups, or he had genuinely been a socialist that was trying to defect from the USA and go join those groups. And there's discrepancies and people argue about that still. But Russia was surveilling him, and they have documentation about his application to be a Soviet citizen. They have documentation about an apparent suicide attempt that he did when he was in Russia. He was assigned to work in Russia while he was there, and they have some interesting documentation about how he was paid his standard salary, but he was also paid an extra amount every month. And then he was also receiving a bunch of rubles to pay for his accommodation, which seems to imply that basically he was put up in a place where they could keep an extra close watch on him, because he was trying to say, I want to join Russia, I'm defecting from the US, I'm on your team. And they were kind of like, we don't buy it. And there's a really interesting, one of the more significant new things that comes up in the report that's never really been disclosed or talked about before, is that apparently Lee Harvey Oswald had written a number of handwritten letters to the USSR asking for citizenship and stuff like that. And those are included in the report. But apparently on November 9th, 1963, he wrote a typed letter to the Soviet Union right before JFK gets shot. That's basically this whole like, it's like another request for citizenship, but the Soviets in this documentation, if we're to believe it all, they say that because it was typed when none of his other letters were, and the wording in it was like really suspicious to them, and they thought it was basically trolling to like hook them into something that they weren't sure what it was. And then like days later, JFK gets shot and they're like, whoa, that's weird. So it seems like the Soviet intelligence perspective on this November 9th letter is that it was probably not written by Lee Harvey Oswald and was instead basically forged to try to incriminate Russia and Lee Harvey Oswald as the factions behind the shooting. That's not substantiated. That's just their assessment of the intelligence. And it is, you know, intelligence officials making that assessment. But it's really interesting to kind of dig into the wording of it and how they analyzed it and all that. There's also a bunch of documentation about exactly what conversations happened in the Kremlin and in the higher levels of Soviet government right when the shooting happened. And it's pretty clear from all of the documented conversations, memos, emails, cables that went back and forth, blamed for this, A, did we have anything to do with it? Like, was this some secret, like, you know, black budget program in the KGB that we don't know about? Figure that out right away. And then when they looked into that and found out that that was not the case, they were basically like, okay, immediately, like, we need to reach out to America, reach out to the Kennedys, apologize, condolences, share everything we've got with them, because they were, it's like we as Americans are propagandized to think of the USSR as this like big boogeyman that wanted to end the world. But over and over again, throughout much of the USSR's history, the actual correspondences from their leadership was more war. What can we do to stop nuclear war?
Right.
And that is, again, the kind of the story in these documents. And I'm not saying that like all the Soviets were wonderful, but it is really interesting to see how they responded like to the minute to the actual assassination. But other than that, there's really not a lot in it. I did search specifically for Israel, just for the heck of it. And Israel was mentioned a number of times, but only kind of in passing, not in any sort of conspiratorial or they had any involvement way. And there wasn't really anything new that we don't already know, aside from sort of like intrigue about Lee Harvey Oswald's time in Russia and Russia's interactions with him.
Okay, because I'd seen some rumors that there were like some pretty explosive things in here, but you didn't see anything about like a second shooter. I saw a report that Russia thought that the FBI thought that there were two shooters, something like that, but nothing.
You know, it is possible. It is possible that that's in there because there's severe limitations to how you analyze such things, and we all sort of choose our own way to analyze it. If I was a Russian speaker, obviously I'd be a million times more equipped to break this down. So right now I'm having to rely on AI's organization of it, translation of it, and then I basically did a bunch of prompting to have AI help pick out the important sections that I should look at more closely. But there's a lot of sections that I have not personally scrutinized yet as well. So it's the kind of thing where anytime there's these new document breaks, especially with these giant documents that no one could ever take the time to read all of it so fast, is it's important to have multiple eyes looking on it and multiple people kind of analyzing everything to double check each other. Because I haven't seen that yet, but it's very possible that it's in there. The way that the documents, like the way that the USSR's correspondences are structured, I totally believe that they would have their own intelligence reports in there about the investigation, about what was sort of being surmised, because they were extremely concerned with who was getting blamed and was it going to get pinned on them and where's the investigation going and how can we avoid conflict with the US over this.
Very, very, very interesting. Yeah. And of course, you know, it would make sense for them. And I think you know, cause I always got the feeling that when Oswald went over there, they sort of mistreated him a little bit and he was kind of pissed off. And of course, the way it was portrayed in historical documentaries, which I'm sure are biased and probably put out by the CIA in the first place. But I always got the impression that he sincerely wanted to go to Russia and they just thought he was a spy and just like kind of wouldn't let him really become Russian. But yep. Were more like, yeah, you can hang out here, you know, just in case we need to, you know, scoop you up as a hostage or something. Like, they're willing to let him live there, but not willing to actually, you know, treat him like a real defector because they were suspicious that he was sent over. So yeah,
that's the interesting space that espionage lives in, really.
Right.
That like we only ever, as regular citizens, we only ever see that in like cinema, in movies. This sort of like gray area of like double agents and who do you work for and deal making. But like when you actually look up and research cases of espionage and intelligence agency operations and stuff, you more and more you start to realize that that is a very real phenomenon. And actually, one of the best examples is Jeffrey Epstein. There's a lot of debate about who he worked for and whether he was sort of like a free agent that contracted out what he had or whether he was set up by Israel, for example, right from the start. And I don't think we know that for sure. But when you look at how he operated, it's very clear, or how his predecessor in certain ways, Robert Maxwell, operated. It's very clear that a lot of these sort of spies, even if you're a low-level dude like Lee Harvey Oswald, you sort of live in this like gray area where if you're going to be useful to the American government that ostensibly hired you, you sort of need to not be affiliated with them. You need to go be undercover, so to speak. But then the moment you're undercover, you're sort of like need to be affiliated with this other group. But often they get so blurry and gray area. And Lee Harvey Oswald's relationship to USSR is, again, this funny kind of space where like he did work with the CIA in some capacity. Maybe he was a defector. It's hard to say. He seemed genuine in his desire to go and be involved in the socialist thing. But like, I don't know. Then he was like back in Dallas and ostensibly, I actually don't remember. I one time looked up, got deep into the rabbit hole of how he came to be in that place in Dallas at the time. And I thought that I had found that it was basically he was assigned to go there by his sort of CIA handlers. But I don't want to claim that too certainly without looking it up again. But it's just this funny gray area of intelligence agency operations being so similar to organized crime and like a blank allegiance to whoever's, you know, giving you anonymous orders that it gets so confusing.
It gets very vague. And of course, you know, he was known for like being part of communist groups in New Orleans, yep, and handing out communist pamphlets. And it's like, okay, was that what he was really doing? Or was that him trying to ingratiate himself with the communists on behalf of the CIA? Or was it the New Orleans mob that had something to do with it? I mean, we're still dealing in the gray area of all of this. But something I've noticed, you know, along with this and a couple of other things, is there seem to be all of these back channels between Republicans and Russians that I'm noticing sort of make themselves known. Have you been following Kirill Dmitriev? He's a special envoy to the U.S. from Russia. But he's also the CEO of their sovereign wealth fund, and he's been making these kind of shocking statements on X, going, "Yeah, you know, the Trump and Russia are working together to defeat the New World Order, basically." And he's Q posting. Huh. He, I guess, is the one that's he's literally posting like something will happen,
right,
and he'll post like a Q post and be like, "See, this is what's happening." Have you? And then
he posted 52 minutes ago a story about John Bolton, and he just posted a storm emoji, which is a Q reference. The storm is coming. So that's amazing. That's
have you been
hilarious.
Looking? And then the first lady Melania Trump came out and said, "I've been working with a back channel with Putin to save these kids." Anna Paulina Luna is working with the ambassador to release the JFK files, and it seems like from reading Kirill Dmitriev's, you know, Twitter post, he's kind of insinuating that like JFK was killed not by the Russians because he was anti-Russian, but because he was actually kind of working with the Russians to try to bring world peace. In fact, if the crew can bring in my computer in
just
a second.
That is what the documents basically allude to. They basically show that the Russians were they liked JFK a lot because he was the most conversational and friendly of all U.S. presidents in recent history, and he was the only one that wanted to normalize relations. And so they were immediately like, they lost a potential ally to bring these nations back together and to heal this divide. And they were worried they were going to be blamed. But it's a super astute observation on your point. That's actually totally a thing that is it's antithesis to the narrative, right, of like Russia bad. But honestly, I'm super stoked on it. Like, that's exactly what I would like to see, is a more, you know, friendly world where we're getting along and cooperating.
Absolutely. Yeah. So there's the storm emoji. I mean, he literally posts like QAnon posts about this stuff, and he is saying it outright. He's saying, "Yeah, we are working together." And of course, when Putin was interviewed by Tucker, he kept saying, "You know, well, you know, I've been around for a bunch of American presidents, and every single one, I go to them and I say, 'Hey, Russia's not communist anymore. We want to be just another European country. Why don't you welcome us in? Why don't we just be trade partners and friends?'" And the presidents always say, "That's so true. What a great idea, Putin. I think we can work on that." Only to come back the next day and go, "Ugh, that's not happening.
Maybe we should coup your neighbor and start a war with you. That would be great."
Yeah, I think we're actually going to try to destroy everything you've built so far because the men in gray suits told us so. So it seems like this is a long, ongoing sort of phenomenon where the presidents of these countries are like, don't want to be at war, but the behind-the-scenes deep state is creating the conflict. This is from Kirill Dmitriev. He says, from the Soviet JFK docs released by Representative Luna, Kennedy-Khrushchev world peace bridge could and should be built between Alaska and Russia at once with the modern boring company technology. This could be a Putin Trump tunnel connecting the Eurasias and America for around $8 billion. So this seems to show that they were working together so well. They were talking about, you know, collaborating on infrastructure together, Kennedy and yep, Khrushchev.
Yep. And that's a drawing from the time. It's super interesting to see and kind of tragic to see like what was taken from the world. Had JFK not been shot, where would we be today? You know, what would have changed? Hard to say, but you're so right. And it is interesting. It's hard not to kind of get very conspiratorial about this sort of, dualistic relationship that America has with Russia right now, where you're right, that there's all these channels that seem to be open, all this friendly conversation and collaboration, while simultaneously, like, the war rages on in Ukraine, and you know, Putin is supposed to be the devil for that. And I just can't help but wonder if it's not another just banker's trick of keep the wars going while we're actually all smoking cigars at tables together in fancy rooms, drinking cocktails and making money off of all these projects, and clear the land over there and start the project over there and keep the peasants fighting. It's hard not to go down that rabbit hole a little bit when you see the sort of duplicity of it all.
Yeah, it seems like there really is something going on behind. Like, I'm not full QAnon yet, but like when you've got, you know, the CEO of the Sovereign Wealth Fund of Russia, special envoy to America, very blatantly posting this, it's like maybe there's something to it. And funnily enough, I just saw Kirill Dmitriev retweeted Alex Jones on Tucker Carlson. So we're clearly on the same side here. And you hear Putin come out and talk about, you know, the Satanists that have taken over Western countries and seem to be at war with their own people. It's like, again, I'm not trying to be a Putin lover, Russophile guy, but he's right. But what am I supposed to say? He's telling the truth. So it's like something weird's going on here.
Honestly, I think that Putin would make a pretty mean InfoWars guest commentator for like an hour segment. It just like let him drop all the bombs on the New World Order and the Western deep state and be like, sick, bro. Nice analysis. Because you know that he has better analysis on the Western deep state than just about anybody, because they've been his basically his adversary for the last 20 or 30 years. That is like an existential threat to him and his entire nation. So honestly, there's probably few experts better versed in the Western deep state than President Putin. You know, not to say that he doesn't have his own deep state to contend with, and Russia is extremely corrupt and has a whole bunch of oligarchical scheming going on behind the scenes at all times. It's important to note out when you're bringing up Kirill Dmitriev and the Sovereign Wealth Fund over there, that there's a lot of wealth over there, and there's a lot of kind of sketchy history behind a lot of that wealth too. A complicated figure with a lot of, you know, secret knowledge and tea to spill should he want to. So I'm very curious. I'm glad you pointed that out. I'm following him now.
Yeah, I'm seeing all these little connections, all these little hints at something bigger happening behind the scenes. And of course, today Trump had a long phone call with Putin and is talking about, you know, meeting him in Hungary, which is an interesting place to meet, with Orban leading the charge. So we'll see what comes next. We only have a few minutes left, and I want to get to this because searching your name today on Google, this was the first response, and it's actually from jpost.com, but Representative Khanna shares documentary featuring Ian Carroll. So I guess your appearance in this documentary was enough to inspire a very angry article about this. But this goes back to what I was asking you earlier about the possibility of uniting with the left. Is it possible? And, you know, I'm just so baffled by the left, because I'll tell you a very, very quick story. In response to the young Republicans, you know, getting in trouble, I put out a post saying, you know, here's what you should say. You should say, screw you. We're not going to clutch our pearls. We're fighting the real bad guys. Somebody commented underneath that, and I couldn't tell if the comment was pro or against me. So I'm like, what is this? I go to the guy's profile to be like, okay, is he on my side or not? He's following me. He turns out he's the drummer from the band Guster. I'll just come out and say he's the drummer from the band Guster. And I'm like, oh, I love that. You know, I used to listen to that band all the time. Like, thanks for following me. And he's like, yeah, I'm actually on the far left. I'm actually like really liberal, but like, I like your takes on Israel. And I think like this is a good time to, you know, come together on all this stuff. And I'm saying to him, like, maybe, but you know, your side is deranged and crazy. And the guy goes, so, you know, he's like, to me, the people that were in that chat, those are the real bad guys. But also, I've been listening to Nick Fuentes more and, you know, some of his. And I'm like, how can you think that the young Republicans are the real bad guys, but you're listening to Nick Fuentes? Like, it's crazy. It's nuts. And so I just don't know how to bridge this gap, but it seems like we're so close. Like, can you talk about that for a little bit and about your
100%
this documentary and everything?
I mean, like, I lived that gap. I came from the left, not that far on the left by any means, but came from the left. I had a lot of friends that are definitely that far left, and I swung super hard right, and now I'm somewhere in the middle. And honestly, I think that for a lot of conservatives, like, just saying, a lot of conservatives don't actually know that many liberals. I think that a lot of conservatives, their perspective on liberals is from the internet. and right. from, you know, the salacious stories that break on Twitter and on Fox News and shit. And that's not what 99% of liberals are. You know, most liberals are regular people, just like most conservatives aren't like in the Klan and waving torches and trying to lynch black people. Like, right? Like, these are caricatures of both sides. And certainly the left has a huge issue with this deeply funded, militant, not organic, radical element in its midst. But that's not like the regular liberals. And I think you're super right that there is this coming together that's happening because we've sort of traded issues on certain issues where, like, the left has always been kind of anti-Israel in this way. And now they're seeing a lot of these people on the right saying those things. And they're like, oh, that's one of these things I care a lot about. And it kind of breaks your frame when you say, like, oh, wait, you're with me on that? Then, like, what else are we in on, right? And I think that in general, we've just got a lot of these issues that are starting to flip-flop, and our leadership has gone back and forth and back and forth and betrayed both sides so many times that now we're sort of all standing in the same room. Not the fringes, not the crazies that are funded by George Soros and shit, but like the regular people are all in one room looking around and being like, well, we are actually all a lot more similar than we are different. And, you know, they keep trying to stoke more fighting. They keep on bringing in more, you know, divisive content. But ultimately, like, it's not really working. And I think we're in that stage where you get to the house party and everyone kind of doesn't know each other very well. And it's like the first year at college and like everyone's sort of like trying to act cool and make friends and like drink a beer. But like ultimately, it's kind of awkward at first. But like you're all there in the same room and you all get it and you're all there to have a party. And like the way I see it is that we just need a little bit of time to adjust to each other. Because, for example, your buddy that you were talking about there, well, not your buddy, but this guy that commented, who was like, hey, actually, like, I have the same take as you on this. I have totally different, right? There's this adjust I thought was Hitler agrees with me on one of the biggest topics.
Right.
Okay. And then it kind of breaks your frame and you have to, I think it takes time. I think it takes months and years to readjust to realizing that, like, all these people that I thought were demons are actually not that different than me. That's crazy, right? And for some people, I think some people are far more flexible in their, you know, mind and soul and are easy to, they can adjust more quickly. But I think a lot of people that are really like firm in their beliefs and have a lot of like integrity in what they think, I think for a lot of people it'll take years to adjust. But like, we are all kind of in the same room together now, and you know, there'll be lots of forces trying to push us apart, but ultimately, you know, as authoritarianism rises, as wealth inequality expands, as the haves and have nots drift way and way further apart, I think it's kind of inevitable that the regular people just get it. Like, we're kind of all in this together. We're all getting left in, you know, the bottom of technocratic hell together, whether we think about red or blue or left or right. It doesn't really matter.
Right. I just, the reason it baffles me is because, like, my positions typically are just a fraction of like a whole worldview that goes into it. And it's always just baffling to me. I'm like, how do we share this when you're just, when I think they're just wrong completely on 90% of everything else? So I'm just like, what is this? You know, how can we bridge this gap? Cause I do think that there's a future in that. And I think you're right. You know, it's going to take some adjustment, and maybe we can both kind of chill out on, you know, what we think, but when the other side is trying to put my boy in a dress, I'm like, well, okay, certain
there
things.
There are some non-negotiables.
Right, there are some things that it's like, how do we get around that? Well, I think the future is bright and things are crazy, and there really has been a turning point recently, not to make a pun. Ian Carroll, thank you so much. Right now on thealexjonestore.com, you get buy one, get one free for any supplement. That includes our incredible Ultramethylene Blue, either the tincture or the capsules, as well as the Shilajit gummies, the Colostrum Plus, the Bovine Colostrum Plus, the Irish Sea Moss gummies. I mean, there's a lot of really incredible stuff. I'm here in studio with Patrick Byrne. I know you're a big fan of the Ultramethylene Blue. Right now, that's buy one, get one free. All supplements, buy one, get one free. It's the Black Friday, came early, mega sale at thealexjonestore.com. Plus, we have a new deal. It's the Hat of the Month Club, where you can sign up and get a new hat every month, which is very fun. Of course, Christmas is coming up, folks. It'll be here before you know it. So do your Christmas shopping for the info warriors in your life. Patrick, you still all hopped up on Methylene Blue?
I am. I pilfer a bottle every time I come. You guys pay me in Methylene Blue. And right. when it's been more than 60 days since I've been here, so I run out, I will absolutely notice within a few days. Within a few days, my life goes back to being a little more lethargic than I should, wanting to sleep in. And it isn't, it's not like speed or something. It isn't something. It's just you feel healthier. You feel
it's like a clean, smooth energy. It's not coffee where you're sort of jittery. It's just like, you just sort of, it's like putting super gasoline in your car rather than the regular stuff. It's subtle, but you notice it.
You do.
Whatever the future may hold, InfoWars will always live forever. The fight will continue. Be sure to follow us on X at RealAlexJones and at AJNLive. And now you can download the number one news app in the world. Go to AlexJonesApp.com and let the Democrat Deep State Party know that we will never be silenced.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.